And I had done a first journey of recognizing, how did I get here? How did I end up in such a toxic situation? And what are the beliefs that got me here? So I had learned a lot about the cycle of abuse, how it works. And I thought I was done with that in my life. And here I was finding myself once again, only this time at work, in an extremely toxic situation. And I hadn't made the connection yet. And so when I went on sick leave, I really put it together. That's when I realized there was a behavioral pattern that was underlying the areas of my life. And I was ready to be done with it.
What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. Are you a leader trying to catalyze change in your home, community, or workplace, but feeling exhausted or overwhelmed by the task? Maybe you're unsure of how to create the change without perpetuating those old paradigms. Well, Qatar El Alawi knows what it takes to activate and achieve long-lasting change from a new paradigm of wholeness. Having reclaimed her own well-being and self-leadership from those old paradigms that resulted in childhood traumas, domestic violence, and systemic oppression, she is bringing forth a whole new way to unfold peace from the inside out. Tune in to hear Qatar share with us how writing her book helped her to heal more layers of those old wounds. You'll find out why leaders lose when they force change and how they win when they unfold it. And you'll learn the most important factor in transforming conflict and opening possibilities. Get ready to gulp some sips of sanity during this episode. Welcome to Sips of Story and Sanity, where we talk about the stories behind the stories with our authors, speakers, thought leaders, healers, parents, and more. My team is with me to help me make sure we get the most delicious sips of story and sanity out of this experience. There's my son, Aaron.
Hello.
And today we have two clients turned friends turned team members and business partners. How does that happen? Teddy.
Hey, y'all.
And Lori.
Hi, everyone.
And today we have the opportunity to have conversation with Qatar El Alawi. I hope I said that right. Who is a conscious leadership consultant, coach, facilitator, mentor, and speaker who partners with conscious leaders and organizations to create cultures of well-being, belonging, and peace. Qatar, welcome to Sips of Story and Sanity.
Thank you, Amanda, and hello to you and the team. Really excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, I'm excited for so many reasons. One is your book is freaking amazing. And the second one is you are our very first author to be published through Saved by Story Publishing, like from the beginning. So it's really fun to have you here today. And I can't wait to hear all of the backstory that I haven't even heard. I feel like I've had the opportunity to be inside of your story to a large degree, helping you to embed it in the manuscript. But I know there are parts of the actual writing journey that we haven't explored together. So I'm excited to get into that today. Thank you. Let's start there. when did you get inspired to write a book?
Well, to say I got inspired, I think is an overstatement. It started out with the pieces of my puzzle that I call my journey have been so scattered and they made no sense. And I was really wondering, how am I going to bring all of this together? I was kind of feeling a little overwhelmed, a little unclear about how the pieces fit together. And so I did what I usually do. I turned to sort of like my inner guidance, my, you know, connection with the higher wisdom. And so it was through a meditation sort of conversation with my intuition that I was asking, like, how do these pieces even fit together? I wasn't even yet at a place where they clearly fit. I sort of had an inkling, like most messengers do, that all these pieces that seem random are not just scattered across time and space, that there is a method to what seems like this madness called purpose. And I wasn't yet putting it together. And so that's kind of how it started. And then in this sort of deep meditation session is when I got the idea that it was going to be in a book. It was the best vessel for the message to come together. And my response to that was, are you mad? Me writing a book. Have you met me, guidance?
How many times does guidance hear that from us?
All the time.
Are you mad? So at this point, had you already started your business and coaching other people on their journey of purpose?
I had started my business. I was not yet coaching people on their journey of purpose because I was really looking for my own. I was in that initial stage of taking the deep dive into what is purpose. And to be fully transparent, I came to the question with a lot of skepticism. I was not a believer in anything. I was not, I had let go and shed away some layers of my thoughts and beliefs from the past. But what I was going to use to replace them with was still very much a question. And I was not willing to take anyone else's answers. So there were a lot more questions than answers in my space. And I didn't feel equipped to take anyone through that journey. But I certainly had been equipped as a coach at that point with both my personal tools that I had developed through years and also the coach training that I had received. And so while it wasn't yet on purpose, it was certainly on what next? The old doesn't fit. Where do I go from here?
Yeah. So you were in the space where I find most new messengers are, where it's like, I have this really cool idea, or I've been compelled, ordered. Some might even say, right? Like, and then it becomes like the writing process becomes like a school. It becomes an opportunity to see what actually we believe as we're writing. Absolutely. And to try to articulate it and sort it out. So how uncomfortable was that with your background as an attorney? Like,
extremely uncomfortable. There is no nicer way to put that. Like, to try to bring the intuitive pieces with the left brain pieces was a whole journey on its own. For myself, so my identity is Moroccan Canadian, and I was not born Canadian. And so I had to learn English and grow into English. And I actually studied law in French, which used to be sort of like my first language. And then I worked in English most of my professional career. So I've always had that recurring message of my English is not good enough. How will I write a book in English? That was a big one to overcome identity-wise. So there were a lot of hurdles along the way, I would say. One of the things that really helped me, though, is I remember I had a call a few years ago with a friend of mine, Martin Root, who is one of the co-authors of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he's the founder of Project Heaven on Earth. And when I told him about my story and that I wanted to write a book, he said to me, you know, Qatar, the journey of writing a book has really two steps. The first one is intention. The second one is discovery. And so, or he called it declaration, that the first one is declaration. You declare to the universe that you're going to do this. And then it's really the discovery of the, what this journey looks like. And it's certainly been that. It's been a lot of discovery, rediscovery. And one of the earlier people I've worked with also said, it's a lot of pre-writing. Everything is pre-writing. And so, as you know, Amanda, by the time I came to you, there had been, I would say, a few years of rewriting already.
So you were so excited when I said, Qatar, this is amazing, because the manuscript came to me actually really amazing. It was one of those manuscripts that I could tell had been honed for a long time. It was very articulate. It was very consistent through the entire project. You know, when I learned that your background was in law, I was like, oh, that makes sense, right? Like, structure is so important. So I could see that, you know, how I imagine, I always think of it like, you know, there's always that messy middle where you're trying to sort out what of all of this goes into that structure. But as soon as you see it, right, that left brain is like, oh, thank God, right? I can have something consistent in every single chapter. So the manuscript was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I know that when people cross my path with, even with extraordinary manuscripts, it's because there's something else that wants to be included. And so I remember reading pieces of your story, which we have come to call the award-winning story.
Yeah, the Golden Globe.
We've been working with Qatar and her visual design too, and she has this beautiful image of a globe with a sprout on top. And one day we were talking about it, and she said, "You know, my Golden Globe." And then she said, "Oh, it almost sounds like an award." And I was thinking, based on your story, you should have earned an award. Like, let's call this logo your award for surviving—not just surviving that story, but actually, you know, rebuilding your health and your well-being and your relationships. Like, it's quite extraordinary. So of course, that was the part that I wanted to tell, because I just knew it would take an already amazing manuscript to another level of power for the reader. So I remember that first phone call and the really deep breath that you took.
Yeah. I remember that too.
And this was before we had enough rapport for you to feel free with your words. So I saw all of that being managed, but yeah, what was, I mean, let's talk about that first, you know,
absolutely,
awareness of like, there could be more story in here.
Yeah. Well, I would say, Amanda, I certainly remember that moment. Because it was the one thing I did not want to hear.
We all remember those moments with her. So yeah, to see everyone's on here nodding their head for everyone listening. Yeah.
Yep. And for everyone listening, get ready. No matter how great your manuscript is, there is going to be another layer of greatness. But yeah, Amanda, honestly, it was, I think my internal response was like, oh dear God, not again. We are not doing this. And I remember what you said to me, the manuscript is powerful, but you're going to lose your reader. And when I asked you why, you said all the concepts are there, but there isn't enough heart. And that was by design, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And that directly links into something I talk about in the book. I was really engineering not being very vulnerable with the book, because it's one thing to know my story. It's one thing to share about my story in a way that's a little bit more sanitized. It's another thing to pull out the pieces that you pulled out into it. And that's probably why I call you the book doula, because for me, it was like another pregnancy yet again, that was fully held by you this time. And I'm so grateful for that, because you challenged me. And I have people who read the book before and after who said, yeah, this really takes it to another level. Like, this reaches me in a new way. And even though I knew that that's what was needed, I resisted it. It's not easy being an author. It's not easy pulling out so much of our own selves. And yet we know as messengers that in service to the world we want to create, in service to that connection piece for people to truly know they're not alone, to truly know that what they're entrusting you to take them into is something that you have the compass for because you've navigated it. And not only navigated it, but oftentimes as the messenger, we've navigated it in the dark. And through multiple layers and experiences of trial and error. And that's precisely what allows us to come to the other side of it. And I've always said this to you, I am so grateful for your own life story. And as hard as some parts of it was, I am grateful because they enabled you to take us through this journey as messengers.
Yeah, it's really the most vulnerable thing to put it on paper for you to look at first, because somehow when it gets on paper, it looks even different than when you say it out loud to someone in a safe space. Right.
It's because the most real it ever gets.
Then you're like, oh shoot, this is an ink. Like this is in publication soon. And how much of this do I want to tell? And the stories of other people, how much of their story can I tell with integrity? Do I have to, you know, adjust some things? And it's very tricky, but I remember reading that manuscript the first time and feeling you had put some of your story in the introduction. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, have you ever heard a therapist, if Carlin were here, she would know the exact term. But it's like the doorbell drop or something like that, where right before the client leaves, they have their hand on the doorknob or the doorknob drop or something like that. Right before they've turned to leave, they say the thing that they actually needed to talk about during that entire session. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my mom died yesterday, you know, and blah, blah. And then they leave. And it's like this, talk about avoiding the vulnerability, right? But it's kind of like, that's what happens with our stories when we haven't really written through them, because I know you did plenty of work working through your stories before you got here, but there's something really special about the writing of it. And so, you know, it takes it from being something that, I mean, I was reading that story and the highlights of it were like, oh, we can't have readers trying to sort out what happened in between these highlights. Like, we either have to tell them or we can't say any of them. Because you have an extraordinary story of what led you here. And I think that's also important for our viewers and our listeners to hear, is what is the journey that led you to the moment where you were like, no, I really don't want to tell this story. Are you crazy? Write a book. And then, Amanda, are you insane? Tell more of my story. So please share a little bit about that so that our listeners know.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda. I think it's, I mean, if I were to try to capture it in a few words, it's really a journey of going from deep brokenness to wholeness. And as you know, it's been brokenness in multiple areas of life. It's been a journey of relationships that have been broken in a way that they cannot be mended back. It's the journey of losing that innocence to the world and to everything we've been taught would bring happiness, health, fulfillment in life, both in a personal space, in a professional space, in a space with systems. And so it's been a lot of feeling broken, a lot of losing trust, and a lot of navigating to, well, if not this, then what? And being in that space of really not knowing for a long time, that messy middle, and a very, very long, at times very dark, rock bottomy type of messy middle. And it's also a journey across cultures, which does not make it easier or simpler to talk about or to bring together the pieces of it. Yeah. And so I mean, I don't know how much depth we can go into here, but if you have any more specific questions, I mean, you know the story, so feel free mm-hmm. to point me to them. But I think those are, that's kind of what I would sum it up. It's when we lose the innocence to everything we taught matters. And then we're like, well, what is it that really matters? And how do I get there from here?
Yeah. There are a few scenes in the book that I think are really, I mean, all of the scenes are wonderful and important. And I think there are some that are just so revelatory of the whole message. So, I mean, I think that, like I said, we could talk about your story all day. Like Aaron and I, as I've given him highlights, he's like, oh, well, you know, that film yeah. production company that we're talking to, maybe someday Qatar will be ready for that. Like, but, you know, I think when you're talking about your audience and you're talking about leaders who are really trying to create change, like really important change, changing systems, changing policies, changing the cultures in their workplaces, you know, that piece of you being like the revelation that you were in a space. I think that story is a really important one for you to share today.
Yeah, thank you. That was definitely, I would say, one of the harder parts of the brokenness. It was not recognizing that maybe I'm not broken. Maybe the promise of the system is not really what it shows up as or what we're told. I think I'm someone who grew up really loving and believing in the ideals of equality, togetherness, compassion, peace, and just recognizing how our systems have embedded in them many ways that perpetuate disconnection and inequality. I think that's been one of the more eye-opening revelations for me, and then seeing how that really is everywhere as far as leadership goes, and seeing the missing pieces, the missing parts a little bit in leadership, the gap between the leadership we proclaim to have in the world and what it actually does, how people work in a way that's completely disconnected from their gifts and from their purpose, not even recognizing the importance of purpose. How we all proclaim to be equal and yet our systems perpetuate inequities. The fact that our systems are completely not trauma informed, and what that does to people at multiple levels, even the way that our healthcare system deals with us as individuals almost as separate pieces of one body rather than as a holistic system that's a mind, body, and soul. And so looking at how can we create a model of leadership that actually really holds a person's fullness, a person's wholeness. And that was a big paradigm shift, even to come into it as people, we are already whole. And yet we're on this journey of coming to a fuller expression of that, which was something I learned as a coach and that really challenged me for years. Because in my own personal space at the time, even with my health, I remember thinking, I can't get through a day without feeling broken. How can you tell me I'm supposed to be whole? Like, that makes absolutely no sense to me. But I think there is an inherent wholeness that we come to life with as individuals. And when we're able to find our way back to that as our source point for life, we can only create more wholeness. And when we embed that into our systems, they become, I think, systems that are more humane and systems that not only are they more humane, I think the bigger problem that we have is that disconnects with productivity. We are consistently pushing and forcing for what we think is productivity. But productivity comes from flow. There's a natural flow that once we tap into that, that's what productivity is. We get more done with less effort than ever before. And yet we don't really recognize that. And So being able to see that paradigm shift and to experience it and live it, I would say has been an eye-opening one. And I think there are a lot of people on this journey of bringing this work now to systems and, you know, working on cultural transformation. And also looking at that, even that paradigm shift between what is change and transformation, and why is it important to work on transformation as opposed to change? Because change often brings us back to the same starting point, because we work on the surface layers, we work on the symptoms rather than the real underlying principles. And that's kind of, I think, also why the book really talks about principles rather than specific methodologies or methods, because if we're working from the principle, which is the core, it's easy to adjust the pieces at the surface level. But if all we're doing is moving around the pieces that are at the surface level, we're never really creating the change that we seek.
And, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of people in the space around creating systemic change and working for more equality. And frankly, if I'm honest, it always makes me super nervous. And this is something that you and I have talked about a lot, because, you know, as I've said, like, there are some hills that I will die on, and there are others that I just won't. And this is one of those spaces where sometimes that changes depending on the person that I'm working with, because they don't have the ability to stay with me and help me to learn what I don't know, right? Yeah. In order to help them make a message more clear and powerful. Mm-hmm. And so I can always feel where those spaces are in the project. It's kind of like when I was at the university and I would read these, you know, Kant and Nietzsche, and I didn't know most of what they were saying, right? But I could always tell my professor where the argument broke down.
Yeah.
And he was like, how did you do that? You know, what was it? I don't know what it was. I just know it went all wrong on page 72. And so it's that inner piece, right? That it's something that knew that something wasn't lining up, mm-hmm. and something had gone sideways. And so, but wrestling through that process is really hard, because while you're writing a book about helping people confront all of their unconscious beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, we have the opportunity to dive into, like, ooh, there's this place in here where it still feels a little, you know, unformed, like it's not quite articulate yet. And so I would love for you to share a little bit about that process, because I know, I think it was what, chapter 7, like the interdependence chapter.
Absolutely.
Because it was a really big piece of the process for me, mm-hmm. as someone supporting you through that process. But I'd love to have you share that, because I think every messenger hits up against these moments in their project where they're like, I'm not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from the messenger lens, what I would say to that is that it's kind of been consistent in revisiting the book with you, Amanda. Every chapter has taken me back into some layer that was still unhealed from that chapter. And we know that the journey never really ends. It just gets easier. We move through it faster. We're better equipped. But there's always that next layer that sort of enlightens us in a new way. And so that's been a constant. But chapter 7 specifically, because it talks about belonging, and how do we create cultures of belonging, and how do we move from polarization, which is very, very rampant right now, and we see it all the time. Everywhere we turn, we see polarization, to creating a culture of belonging. And so obviously, you and I have a lot of differences. If we look at it on the surface level, we're very different people. We have very different backgrounds. We have very different beliefs that we come to life and work from. And so that certainly showed up for us as well in that chapter, given that that's what that chapter was about. And it's been a deep exploration for me of how do we create belonging across differences? And I've seen and I've witnessed and experienced a lot of polarization in the space of togetherness across all sorts of divides, whether they're racial divides, whether they're cultural divides, whether they're divides around gender, even though gender is a much more flexible concept nowadays. Only a few years ago, we still had very different ways of thinking about it. And so it's like all those beliefs are really being pulled up for us to see them now. And a lot of us are still getting stuck in not wanting to see it. Some of us are in the place of, oh, we see it, but this is hard. We don't know how to move to the other side of it. And for me, it's been really an exploration of many, many years, I would say, if not an identity exploration of a lifetime so far. And I think what we did well together is we named where we were coming from into the exploration. We were committed to staying with it. And we also challenged each other. But we didn't challenge each other from a space of, I want to be right. And I think that's one of the most important pieces is, I think we need to create a paradigm where we can both be right. Because your truth is right for you, and my truth is right for me. And it's bringing our truths together to the table from a place where we can each hold our needs as real and sacred for us. And yet come to a place of how do we make these two fit together? I think that's the big difference. Whereas a lot of the divides, we're still in the place of I'm right and you're wrong. And I think that's also natural. It's a natural progression to conflict. And that's part of why I teach conflict transformation as a core skill before we even get to those conversations, because they are challenging and they're relatively new. In our both emotional and social body, those conversations are relatively new. So we're still seeing a lot of either guilt or shame or anger that are stuck, that keep us stuck below that layer of the togetherness that's possible on the other side of that. And I think you and I experienced that together. We went through the full spectrum and acknowledged what was there. And like every other chapter, that's what it does. It really pulls us in, and there is no going around this work. There's one thing I've learned through this is that alignment, real alignment, is uncompromising. There is no way to fake it. There is no way to toxic positivity around it. There is no way to dance around it. And we all know, we have an inner compass when we know when we're settled and we know when something is not. And so it's really, how do we stay with the conversations long enough? And honestly, for some of us, the conversation is, how do I create a sense of safety for myself enough to be in the conversation? And that for me as a woman of color has been a long exploration, because I had a lot of trauma and I've had to sift through a lot of trauma. And learning to source my own safety has been a huge journey. And there are conversations that I did not have the inner safety to step into. And then there were the stretch conversations where I had some sense of safety and I was still stepping into the conversation knowing there's some sense of safety that I don't have. And giving myself permission to withdraw if I needed to self-care when I needed to. The one thing I always found helpful is really communicating through it. And that even if my response is to shut down or to say, you know what, this is not right for me right now, to at the very least communicate that this is not right for me right now. And we may revisit it in the future, but right now, this is what I need for myself. But I think we have a long, long way to go to come out of the way that we project our needs on each other. And just for each one of us to find our own center in these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I think about, some of the other messengers I've watched on the same path and sort of message, I think that's that piece, that internal safety piece, is the differentiator. If I hear that that is part of the message, then I am willing to lean in to the really uncomfortable space and have the conversations. But I've had some where I've been talking to possible clients and I have heard them trying to make me make them feel safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, let's say like a constant policing of my words or my intentions or my, and it's policing, not curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. It's coming from that space of them being upset and needing me to fix it. And even though I'm always that person who wants to be part of a solution, I don't want anyone feeling upset as a result of something that I say, or don't know that I said oftentimes. I can't get anywhere without that internal safety conversation, even if we're not great at it. I'm still working on it myself. But if it's not like the thing that ties the two people mm-hmm. together in the conversation, I walk away from that conversation a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. And I think it is really hard to get to that place of internal safety, but it does make the entire difference. And I would say on the other side of that is, when I find my own safety, I need you to be able to hear my truth. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's the part that you brought in, is that you don't go and tell me that my truth is something that you have an opinion about. It is not your place to have an opinion about it. It's your place to hold the need that emerges from it with me and see, can we co-create something with this? Mm-hmm. And so it's also really being in these conversations requires us to overcome the desire to not hear certain things, because these are deep, honest, truthful conversations that will bring out everything we have in the shadows. And it's generational stuff. It's not even just us. And so I need to be able to own where I might be coming to this from disempowerment, because it's what I've inherited generationally. But the other person needs to be able to own where they might be coming to it from power over. And then we can have a conversation. But if I'm going to be met in denial, of course, it's going to re-trigger my sense of not safety. And I can tell you that. I can say, I'm not feeling safe right now. But if you're not willing to own the other piece, then we're done. Like, this is just not a conversation for me. Thank you very much. And mm-hmm. I think that's important sometimes to be able to give ourselves that permission. And yet, how do we have these, even that conversation with some sense of transparency? Because at least for me, what I found is the truth, it frees me up. I don't even do speak in my truth for the other person. I do it for me. It is a very selfish act because it's a self-care act. When I'm able to own my truth, it helps me navigate the world. And so if I realize that the other person is not willing to hear it, that's where I stop. But I don't hide my own truth from myself anymore. And I don't ask for permission to name it. I name it with care. Of course, I shape my communication in a way that it can be heard and not triggering, but I no longer own what the other person is willing to hear or not, because that's not my place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the, and I love how you, one of the really beautiful things about the order of your book and the way that you structure the 9 principles. And then when we started to look at your personal journey and how we would structure it inside of the 9 principles, it was really, really fun to see how you had maybe not even consciously followed your own arc of learning. And so it was really a cool thing to do it. But right before that, chapter 7, that really tough conversation where we're trying to sort out, like, we have needs to be individuals, but we also have needs to be connected to each other. And how do those things come together is the chapter around meeting our own needs. So yeah. I thought that was really perfectly delivered. So that was one of the things for me. But we have, you know, Lori and Teddy here who read the book. Yeah. They're our readers. And so I'd love to hear, what were some of your ahas, or maybe some of the questions that you had while you were reading through the book?
Well, first of all, I loved your book. I thought it was very enlightening and very empowering. and helped to confirm some feelings maybe that I was having and trying to sort out for myself. So I really love that. Mm-hmm. One of the things, and this goes along with the conversation you were just having, is that one of the things that you talked about, I want to say it was like chapter 3, where you're talking about our freedom of choice. And you have, if I remember correctly, it's been a little while since we read, but if I remember correctly, you have been gone from your job for quite a while, several months, maybe a year, I don't remember now.
9 months, yeah.
And you go walking back in, and the manager, it was the manager, I think, Paula, I'm trying to look at the chapter here real quick. You said to her, I'm telling you that I came back to face the events I suffered here, not asking for permission. And I love that, because you set that boundary right there. I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. And the only choice that you get, quoting you, is whether you will help me do what is right for me or whether I will have to do it on my own. I love that. That was very empowering, because you did it in a, not a hurtful way, not a, I am better than you, or I'm coming in to take over, or look at me, I'm back. But it was a, I'm here to see if I can figure this all out and fix it for me, you know, make it right for me. And if you're with me, great. But if you're not, I'll do it on my own. I don't need you. And I think so many times we feel like if we don't have that certain support, or we don't have that one person there that's by our side, or that we just feel like we can't do it. Because I think so many of us have been taught that we're just not good enough. That there's, you know, that there's that whole abuse layer, you know, there. Mm-hmm. And to see you just like, bam. No, and I'm sure that had been really difficult for you to say, and it had to have just like come from deep inside, because I just, man, it brought tears to my eyes, because I'm still emotional right now, because it was just so empowering, just so, I don't even have words to express how that affected me. But that was one, I loved it. And there's stuff like that throughout the entire book. But showing people the disempowering beliefs and going through each one of those and giving them the tools. I'm just in awe of you. I think you, with everything you have been through, you have done such an amazing job of sharing that with others and helping others to see how they can take back that power and quit giving it away.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lori. I even feel moved when you bring back that chapter. That was certainly, I would say, one of the most difficult moments and one of the most empowering moments of my journey. And the honest truth is, when those words came out of me in that moment when I was physically there, I had never planned to say anything like that. It was totally uncharacteristic of me. And I remember when I said them, I literally looked around the room and was like, whoa, where did that come from?
I think
it's just, and like you said, they did come from really deep. Like, it wasn't even something I had thought about, but I think there comes a moment in life where, at least for me, I had been so conditioned to systematically give my power away and look for approval. I had been taught that my self-worth hindered on other people's approval all the time. And I didn't realize the extent to which I was always looking for my value in other people's eyes. If my parents are happy, if my boss is happy, if this, if that. And it was always about the other person. And at that point, when you talk about that in chapter three, at that point, I had come out of an abusive marriage, and it had not been an easy endeavor to come out of it. I had a child at the time. I had to sort of really pull my life back together from what had felt like at the time, I thought it was like, this is the worst it can ever get. And I had done a first journey of recognizing, how did I get here? How did I end up in such a toxic situation? And what are the beliefs that got me here? So I had learned a lot about the cycle of abuse, how it works. And I thought I was done with that in my life. And here I was finding myself once again, only this time at work, in an extremely toxic situation. And I hadn't made the connection yet. And so when I went on sick leave, I really put it together. That's when I realized there was a behavioral pattern that was underlying the areas of my life. And I was ready to be done with it. I was just so ready. I had learned that my self-worth has actually nothing to do with people's opinion. And I think I realized that giving my own needs away, expecting people to meet my needs, was not doing me or them any favors. And so that was coming to it from a sense, a radical sense of really self-responsibility of, you know what, I know better now. I know that it's not by expecting you to help me. Yes, you're a leader here and you have a role to play. But I was almost telling myself, this is this person's role. They can support me, but they can't do this for me. So I was sort of not trying to not let myself fall back into the old trap. And it certainly worked because I never expected what came next. But it was a much more empowered chapter, I would say, of my life from then on, for sure.
It was one of my favorites. It resonated with me because of the things, some of the things that I have been through. I felt like I can see this, you know, like, okay. So that's why this is happening. So thank you. I love it. I love the book. It's amazing. And yeah, you are amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I would say I have learned a lot about being amazing together in this space, because I've certainly met people here who are amazing. Each of you have really been such a pillar of support through this journey, and I'm grateful for that.
I'll share a little. So your story was, you know, breathtaking, and I had to breathe through it a lot of times. I couldn't identify with your struggle as your journey as you went through it. But there was something about the principles and the things that I was able to go into my life and my traumas and what I had decided. For example, because of my traumas, I had decided as a real small child, I guess I just don't really matter. And that just became a belief system that I had that enabled me to give up my power continually, what I wanted, what mattered to me, what I didn't want was forced on me. And, you know, it was just this all the time. And like when I, in 2019, got this awareness that I do matter, as is our typical human nature. It was like, I matter, you know, screw you, I matter. Like, you know, I matter. That over, what do you call it? Overcorrecting, like over. And all of 2019, and I think into 20, was that learning that balance of I matter and you matter too.
Yeah.
So how do I matter without being ugly? How do I matter without taking your power away? I mean, it was this thing that I did it all inside of me. I wasn't having to, like you and Amanda, trying to work together to come to some kind of thing. But that was what I was experiencing as I was reading the books, like, oh, you know, that journey that I went through inside of myself to come to this very knowing that I matter. My safety, you know, because every time I made you responsible for my mattering, that didn't work.
Yeah.
Every time, you know what I'm saying? Like, the conversation around safety, it kept resonating with this journey that I was newly had gone through to say, I matter. I'm 100% responsible for my mattering.
Yeah.
And I'm responsible for doing this in a way that is loving and kind and considerate and allows you to matter too. And the message, you know, that message of anyway, my point is I couldn't relate to your traumas.
Yeah.
But because of the way the book was done and everything, it brought me into a deeper awareness of my own traumas and how to navigate them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Teddy. It absolutely makes sense. And in fact, I think what you're pointing to is one thing that I had told Amanda as well, and why I resisted bringing more of my own journey. I would say there are two things. One is my journey can feel overwhelming. It is a lot to hold, and I know it. I've held it. I've had people support me in holding it, but I did not want the book to become a way for the reader to feel overwhelmed. And so I wanted to make sure. And then, of course, on the other side of that, I don't want the reader to be hijacked and try to save me either. So I really wanted to the message to come across in a way of, this is really about you. It's about what I learned. It's not about me. And then it's about the universality of what I've learned.
Right.
And I think the point you're making is exactly that, is that it's not about resonating with my journey or my traumas. In fact, I would hope most readers don't even resonate with that degree of traumatization. For sure, the principles that are embedded at a deeper layer, I think we can all recognize ourselves in one way or another. And I think even some leaders might recognize themselves on the other side of that. And the idea is exactly what you said. How do we hold both with equal care?
Right.
Because it's not about vilifying whoever is on the other side of those equations or those situations. At least for me, I believe that at a soul level, we're all playing out something bigger. And at a soul level, we've all played all these roles of, you know, the victim, the persecutor, the empowered self. And it's about how do we create a certain dynamic in our lives where we're living most of it from our empowered self and then meeting the other, but also enabling their empowered self to come through. And for that, I have to thank my first husband as my biggest teacher, because having lived with that level of violence, I can certainly say I have learned the impact of that. And it's not something that I want to perpetuate in the world. And that's part of where my work around peace comes from. I don't think we're really enhancing anyone's lives by perpetuating, you know, the everything that just promotes anger, fear, hate. And so how can we create dynamics that enable our empowered self to come through and then bring out other people?
Very powerful book, Ms. Katar. Very powerful.
Thank you.
How about you, Erin? Before you're launching into the world of business and organizational structures, and how does all of this conversation land on you?
Well, it sounds like I need to read the damn book, which is what I was planning on doing when it comes out on September 21st, by the way.
Thank
you. I can't wait for that. We're all going to be there together. That's going to be really fun. I would say that it sounds like when I hear you speak and like the language you use and like the language I see on your website, I'm like, I know that this, you ever see someone use the same vocabulary as you and like their words that like maybe you don't, you know, people don't really say, but like it's in this little bubble that you are really interested in. It's like that, you know, and it's really exciting to me. When, you know, you find people like that, and it excites me to read your book and find out more about that. As a person currently still workshopping their passion and their place, right? Another resource, you know, a way to go through it and really lay it out, another perspective of doing that, and a guide, sounds really needed right now. Another layer of that is always is always needed, but right now specifically. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being in our community. It's really awesome working with you. You're really amazing. And I know, you know, I haven't been in the work with you, like in the story work, but the way my mom talks about you, like you're just amazing. So thank you for being here.
We have a real love here for people that are in the work, that do the work.
That's right.
That hit the wall and knock themselves out and get up and say, okay, let's do this. Let's keep going. And you know, that's what I've heard about you, that even when it got hard, that you leaned in. And that's what we have to, you know, that's what it's all about. Can we, for everybody, say the name of her book? And
yeah,
I've already forgotten. No?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So the book is called Unfolding Peace. And the subtitle is Nine Principles, or sorry, not the subtitle, what's the right word for that?
That's right.
That's right, yeah.
Nine Principles to Create Cultures of Well-being, Belonging, and Peace.
Yes.
Yeah. Very exciting work. Really important message. Amazing messenger embodying her message. Thank you so much for inviting us to run alongside you. As Erin said, we will be, actually, as this podcast is launching, we're all going to be meeting up in Nashville, Tennessee for an exciting two-part event. The first part will be launching your book and in person with all of the sweets and salts and spirits required to do that really well. And then, of course, we're going to head over to the story conference, which is going to be, I think it's going to be amazing. And, you know, anywhere where we can start connecting with people who are, who understand the power of storytelling and who understand that that is the way to make a dent, to create those changes. I'm thrilled about that. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, to that, Amanda, really all of life is a story, right? All our life is about stories. And we do talk about that, or I do talk about that in the book as well. If, you know, you've seen, we've talked about it together. It's, as Brené Brown says, it's the stories we tell ourselves. And so to Erin's points also earlier about language, it's so cool to now see this language become more and more mainstream. I was speaking with a leader just this past weekend, last week, and they started to talk about alignments all of a sudden. And I was like, I was so excited because I was like, oh my God, the language is really making its way into the mainstream now. And so I think it's language that we all need. I think we need to reshape not only how we experience things, but how we call them, because words can also be triggering and they have a history and a charge. And so to be creating new narratives, we also need new language. And so I'm really excited to be doing this work with leaders who are willing to examine the narratives that their own workplaces are carrying or their own systems are carrying, and then shifting that together. And I'm, of course, very grateful to be doing it with all of you, because you certainly have the mastery of bringing out the best in a story and reshaping it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be fun. And that leads me to the wondering of what's next.
Yeah, well, what's next is a few things. I mean, the first one being get the book on September 21st. And I think we'll have the link below for where people can register for that. And from then, there's going to be a few opportunities to engage in different ways. There is going to be some free monthly calls where each month we're going to look at a chapter of the book together on just a free call on Zoom where people can come in from anywhere around the world and have that conversation, take a deeper dive into the principles and again, their universality across differences. And then there's going to be an actual program, Unfold in Peace, which is going to be a 6-month program for individuals who really want to take a deep dive into embodying these principles for themselves and in their lives. And so we're going to be going beyond the intellectualization, again, of this work and into what this looks like, once every day, one day at a time, one situation at a time, unfolding peace. And I like to say fail forward. For me, that's one of the big ways that I like to go through life is one failure at a time, learn better and do better.
Yeah.
And then, of course, for those who want to look at how this work can work in their own systems or their own workplaces, there is going to be, of course, there is already a program for that. And then we can adjust it and, customize it to their own environment. And so they can reach out through the website for that as well.
Love it. All right. So the website is?
www.consciousTogetherness.com. And we'll probably, again, have the link there, right, Amanda?
Yeah, we'll put the link below. So.
Perfect. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being part of our community, being part of us, doing what we feel called to do, get great messages and stories out into the world so that they can start attuning people to that alignment thing, helping them to attune to the good that's possible. So.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And again, it's been such a healing journey, even for myself, that I can only say thank you. Thank you for the way you hold it. It is. I've worked with a lot of people across the industry, and I can honestly say the level of alignment, care, gentleness that I've experienced in your space, along with accountability, has been rare for me to find. So I'm really grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, we could talk forever, but I think that needs to be the wrap. Thank you so much to our listeners for listening to this episode of Sips of Story and Sanity. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing, leaving us a review, and maybe even sharing your own aha moment of maybe when you noticed that it was a little bit easier to unfold peace than force it. And remember, as of the launch of this podcast, tomorrow is the day to pick up Katar's book on Amazon, Unfolding Peace. All right, we'll see you then.